ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, the latest inflation figures were out today, and it's still not a pretty picture. The Australian Bureau of Statistics today revealed consumer prices rose 6.8% in the 12 months to April, and that was higher than expected. The most significant price rises were in housing, transport, food, and non-alcoholic beverages. Now, the Reserve Bank Board meets again next Tuesday to decide whether or not to again raise interest rates. Coincidentally, Reserve Bank Governor Philip Lowe was in Senate estimates today, answering questions on a range of topics. He acknowledged higher interest rates are unpopular, he said, and painful, but argues they're necessary and that Australia remains on a narrow path to bringing down inflation while avoiding a significant downturn. He said Australians are now devoting the highest share of their income to mortgage repayments since records began. And he had this to say about wage growth to help meet the inflation and cost of living rises.
Our forecast is that wage growth picks up a bit more, but the wage price index grows maybe by 4% this year. So that, in the normal course of things, 4% wages growth is not problematic. But it is problematic if we have no productivity growth. The reasons for weak productivity growth are complex, I think, partly it's due to the pandemic. Businesses were in survival mode rather than growth mode, and investments slowed down, and there were disruptions, and kind of you couldn't get investment goods and you couldn't get people. So all those things hurt productivity growth during the pandemic. That's now behind us, so perhaps we'll now see productivity growth pick up. If we do, and we return to 1% productivity growth, which is what we've done historically, then the current level of wage growth is not problematic. But if we don't, then there is a reality we have to face into. If there's no productivity growth, then it's hard to have increasing real wages.
All right, joining us for Nightlife News Breakdown this evening, Peter Bodkin, who's the National Chief of Staff at Australian Associated Press. Peter, good evening. Welcome back.
Good to be back. Thanks, Phil.
The RBA governor there telling it like it is in his view of the world. What's been the response to the 6.8% inflation figure amongst business commentators?
It's come as a bit of a surprise. So the figure's up from 6.3% in March, and that's bucking the general trend of inflation, which has been down for several months now, and the commentary from the RBA, amongst others, that inflation has peaked. So it's come as a little bit of a surprise, but there are seasonal factors at play here. And this monthly inflation index that we're talking about is more volatile than the standard quarterly one that's traditionally been used. So we're comparing prices to a year ago when a temporary cut to the fuel excise was in place. Mm-hmm. And that means that while the figure that we're looking at the moment doesn't look great, maybe there's not quite as much to worry about, and we're not quite at panic stations yet.
Mm. Yeah, the governor was also commenting about the pain of those with big mortgages, and it wasn't all that reassuring about the prospect of no interest rate rise next Tuesday.
So it's working and it's painful, but there are risks here. Success is not guaranteed here. Quite a few things have to go right for us to tread this narrow path, and it's going to be painful for a while yet.
Doesn't exactly augur well for mortgage holders next Tuesday, Peter.
Yeah, look, I've given up trying to read the tea leaves on Philip Lowe. The RBA was widely expected to keep rates on hold this month, and they went for a hike. A lot of economists are still predicting, even after this inflation result, that the RBA will hold again next Tuesday. But this result is certainly going to skew the outlook towards more pain for borrowers. I think it's widely expected that we are in for a couple more interest rate rises before the RBA stops. We just don't know exactly when they're going to come and if the pain's going to be straight away or if we'll have to wait a little while for it.
Mm. He was also quizzed about what he thought of the issue of very high rents. This is Philip Lowe was quizzed in a shortage of properties. And firstly, he had this to say about expectations around rent rises.
It's a very significant issue because rents is the single largest component in the CPI. So what happens there is very important, and we're expecting growth in rents in the as measured in the CPI to be kind of around close to 10% this year. It's very tough, and some people are experiencing bigger increases in rents than that. So it's really hurting.
Yes, but he, well, then he offered his solution. He said, well, I've got an idea. Let's all bunk in together.
Well, the increase in supply can't happen immediately, but the higher prices lead people to economise on housing, don't they? Kids don't move out of home because the rent's too expensive, or you decide to get a flatmate or a housemate because it's so. That's the price mechanism at work. We need more people, on average, to live in each dwelling, and prices do that.
So, Peter, you'll be taking a lodger, I expect. Where are you, or you're moving the family back in with the in-laws?
It's an interesting idea from Philip Lowe. I'm curious to know if he'll be taking in lodges in his Randwick digs to help pitch in for Team Australia. I don't think we've got any space left at our place at the moment, unfortunately, so we won't be able to do anything for the economy.
He does. I mean, he's talking like such an economist there, doesn't he, all about what the markets dictate and dutiful consumers behaving according to economic theory and price points, and this is the price signal and blah, blah, blah. It's really another mindset to those who are actually facing the realities of finding a place to live, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, as you say, it's a real economist answer, and it might make sense to an economist's mind. I do think it makes a little bit of light of a very real problem for a lot of people, which is these huge rises in rents, particularly for young people. But there is an element of truth there. I certainly know anecdotally of people who moved out of shared accommodation and into their own places during the pandemic when rents dropped for probably the first time in living memory. So there might be an element of that, but it's also unrealistic to just say to everyone, hey, kids, stay at home with your parents for another few years and together we'll fix the housing crisis. There are obviously a lot deeper issues at play there, like the supply of housing and the demand for it, which, you know, bunking down together is probably not going to be a long-term solution for.
I wouldn't have thought so, no. All right, look, on to other things. WA's got a new premier. Well, almost, it seems, after Mark McGowan's shocked but understandable decision on Monday to quit as premier. He says he's exhausted. Western Australia will soon have a new premier, and it's going to be Roger Cook, apparently. There wasn't a vote. There was an anointment by a committee. Who's Roger Cook?
Roger Cook's not very well known outside WA, where he's very much played second fiddle to Mark McGowan as his deputy. He's been in Parliament for a long time, 15 years, and he's been the deputy premier for the past six of that. So he's been Mark McGowan's number two during the pandemic period and the subsequent era. He's widely seen as a safe pair of hands. There are no obvious skeletons in his closet that we know about yet. So I think Labor here will be hoping for an element of continuity, someone who's well-known within the government, probably broadly recognisable amongst the public, but doesn't have any real obvious downside that's going to turn the voters off.
There didn't seem to be any didn't seem to be a real competition for the job anyway, was there?
So he's officially standing unopposed, which means his premiership should be rubber stamped by the Labor caucus next week. The woman who's expected to be his deputy, Rita Saffiotti, also indicated that she would seek the leadership initially, but she ended up on a unity ticket with Cook. The only other person to throw their name in the ring was the Health Minister, Amber Jade Sanderson, but she also withdrew. We can only assume that the other pair weren't able to muster the numbers and Cook got the nod.
Yes, this is a grab of Roger Cook at his press conference with his prospective deputy, Rita Saffiotti, today.
I'm born and bred West Australian. This is the state where I've lived my entire life. It is where I've raised my children. I've devoted my life to serving this state, to do everything possible to ensure WA is prosperous for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there are implications here, aren't there? I mean, we've discussed them a bit this week on the program about the federal implications for this, because Labor's majority federally, as we know, is very thin and was in some respects held up by the good results in federally, that is, in Western Australia, which all, of course, you would say flow from the popularity of Mark McGowan. So there are issues at stake here, aren't there?
Yeah, there's a fair bit of at stake. We know that Mark McGowan's been wildly popular in WA and led his party to a landslide victory at the last state election. So this change will really highlight how much of Labor's success in WA, both at a state and federal level, was down to McGowan's popularity personally. I did note with interest there that Cook, in the grab that you just played, mentioned how he was WA born and bred, whereas Mark McGowan's famously a blow-in, so maybe he's appealing to a bit of next-level WA parochialism there. But, you know, there are some serious challenges coming on the horizon for him. He's going to have to stare down some of the other Labor state premiers over the carve-up of GST, which is a perennial debate and tug-of-war with WA. And there's also some domestic issues that are causing headaches, like the performance of the health system and problems at the Banksia Hill Detention Centre that have been well publicised. So it'll be very interesting to see whether he manages to continue the success that Labor's had in WA, or if the shine will come off the star once McGowan's no longer running the show.
Yes, indeed. All right. On the Voice, Peter, MPs in Parliament House today were clapped as the Voice Bill, that is the Constitutional Alteration Bill, setting up the referendum, passed through the House of Reps. It passed pretty comprehensively, 121-25. The passage of the bill now heads to the Senate and brings Australia a step closer to a referendum to be held later this year, we think in October, on creating this Indigenous voice to Parliament. I guess it was a landmark moment on the journey, isn't it?
It's obviously an essential step, but it is also very, very much a procedural one. The referendum bill will still need to pass the Senate, which it almost certainly will. But the real issue of arguing over the actual voice campaign is still to come. So it is a landmark moment, but at the same time, there's still a lot to come in this referendum.
Yes, that's true. That's true. It passed through without change. That's significant. I mean, there were some last-minute pleas from Liberal MP Julian Leeser. Now, he supports the yes vote but did want wording changes to get rid of this reference to executive government. He said that that would make the proposal easier for some, although he wasn't really saying who. This is Indigenous Australians Minister Linda Burney speaking after the vote today with a message from Senator Pat Dodson.
Today, we are one step closer to recognising Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in the Australian Constitution. I want to start by reading out a short statement from Senator Patrick Dodson, the Special Envoy for the implementation of the Uluru Statement. Patrick, of course, can't be with us today, but he is certainly watching on, and he has sent this statement. This morning's vote is a positive step towards the referendum, which will bring the nation together and set us on a new path, to deal in a focused manner through the voice with the social ills which beset Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. The legislation is now in the hands of my colleagues in the Senate. I hope the debate there will be informed and enlightened and will help us understand why a successful referendum is important.
Well, yeah, OK, the opposition's still campaigning for a no vote, though, aren't they, Peter, despite their support for a form of recognition? This is Nationals leader David Littleproud speaking today.
Just ask them to seek to understand us, because the disadvantage and where the gap hasn't closed is invariably in our electorates, in the remote and rural areas. And what we're saying is that putting in another layer of bureaucracy where we're sending people to Canberra to generalise the concerns of communities across vast distances and different needs will again result in the same outcomes.
Still a lot of water to flow, Peter, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, we've still got about 6 months to go, give or take a little bit, for the actual referendum. So there is a lot of water to flow under the bridge and a lot more to be said before we know how the referendum will shape up. That said, both sides really have broadly mapped out their campaign and their stance. We know that the Liberals and the Nationals are going to be overall opposing the Voice, and Labor obviously is very keen to push it through. So, you know, there's going to be a lot more said on this, and I think we're going to hear a lot more about all sides of the Voice debate and before the referendum.
Yes, well, that's right. Then let's hope everyone, all Australians, get more informed about it. That would be a good thing too. All right, Peter.
Absolutely.
Peter, good to talk. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.